In Super Bowl 51 in 2017, the Patriots faced a 4th and 3rd at their own 46-yard line. The score was 28-3, with only 6:04 left in the third quarter. The Patriots seemed dead in the water. Pro Football Referee said that the odds of Patriots winning at that point was 0.5%. But Tom Brady found Danny Amendola to connect and complete the fourth down. After only scoring 3 points in the first half, Brady led 5 consecutive scoring drives, including 2 touchdown drives, both followed by a 2-point conversion in the fourth quarter, sending the game into overtime. Of course, in overtime, Brady threw 5 straight passes to seal the victory in overtime, and securing the biggest and most dramatic comeback in NFL history. But not even Tom Brady can pull off a bigger comeback than the one we're going to see happen today. It is the greatest comeback of all time, not only for our time, but for eternity as well. Picture it. It's late Saturday night, early Sunday morning. The Jewish leaders thought they had successfully defeated Jesus. They were patting themselves on the back, bragging about how they had manipulated Pilate and the crowds, laughing about how they actually got Barabbas released instead of Jesus. Genius! Little did they know that the greatest comeback of all time was about to unfold. Let's take a look at the account. In Matthew chapter 27, we're going to start with verses 57 through 61. When it was evening, there was a rich man from Arimathea named Joseph, who also was a disciple of Jesus. He went to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. Then Pilate ordered it to be given to him. And Joseph took the body and wrapped it in a clean linen shroud and laid it in his own new tomb, which he had cut in the rock. And he rolled a gray stone to the entrance of the tomb and went away. Mary Magdalene and the other Mary were there sitting opposite the tomb. Here we see an act of honor for the king. We learn from John 19:38 that Joseph was a secret disciple of Jesus, but he also feared the Jews. John MacArthur explains that up to this point, Joseph had been a secretive disciple of Jesus because he was afraid of what it would cost him. He was afraid of the other Jewish leaders. If they found out he was following Jesus, it would be the end of his Sanhedrin rights. It'd be the end of his wealth because he wouldn't be able to do business with anybody. It'd be the end of his social status. Joseph and his family would be alienated and ostracized. But somewhere along the line, maybe after seeing what took place on Golgotha, he broke free from his fear of the Jewish leaders and publicly proclaimed Jesus as the Messiah. He was a member of the Sanhedrin. He must have been rich and influential to be able to approach Pilate with such a request. If Joseph had not made his request to honor the body of Jesus, Jesus' body would have been thrown into a common grave. Not only was Jesus spared the shame of a criminal's grave, but Joseph's request was a sign of respect and honor. He was placing Jesus in his family's tomb. Criminals were not supposed to be buried in a family tomb. Through the act of burying Jesus, if he was a criminal, Joseph was rendering his new expensive tomb as repulsive and unusable moving forward. No family member would want to have their body buried with a criminal. Joseph's act was an act of generous worship. Matthew shares that Mary Magdalene and the other Mary were witnesses to the tombstone being rolled into place. Here we see that Matthew is telling the truth. His account is trustworthy. If Matthew were lying to make up the story of the resurrection of Jesus, he would have said that there were men who were there as witnesses. Women in biblical times never counted as credible witnesses. Only a man could testify in the court of law to the validity of facts. Matthew's making nothing up with his account. He simply recounts the events as they accurately happened. Let's keep reading. Verses 62 through 66. The next day, that is, after the day of preparation, the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered before Pilate and said, "Sir, we remember how that impostor said, 'While he was still alive, after 3 days I will rise.' Therefore, order the tomb to be made secure until the third day, lest his disciples go and steal him away and tell the people. He's risen from the dead, and the last fraud will be worse than the first." Pilate said to them, "You have a guard of soldiers. Go. Make it secure as you can. So they went and made the tomb secure by sealing the stone and setting a guard. Here we see the securing of the identity of the king. In verse 62 through 66, we see the chief priests and the Pharisees ask for additional security to stop possible attempts by Jesus' followers to take the body or furnish fake evidence of a resurrection. The religious leaders knew that even dead, Jesus and his followers were a threat to them. Pilate grants the Jewish leaders their request for tomb security. Now, the tomb was already secured with a large tombstone, one that would take many men to roll away. But they also had a seal placed on the tomb to prevent tampering, kind of like a seal on a letter to show that the letter had not been opened. I don't know what they used, if it was wax or something else, but it was placed there to make sure that it could not be opened from the outside. On top of that, the guards were placed at the tomb, standing guard. Guards who failed to do the job assigned to them would be executed. The guards had every reason to make sure that the tomb of Jesus was secured. All these factors meant that nobody was getting to that body, and there was no way that body was leaving the tomb. The only thing getting that body out of that tomb was a supernatural event. The Jewish leaders are like villains in a movie or a cartoon we watch. They try their best to thwart the plans of the hero, but it never works. Goodness always prevails. The Roadrunner always outwits the coyote. The villains never defeat the Avengers. The Joker never prevails over Batman. Despite all the schemes and conniving of the chief priests and the Pharisees do to make sure Jesus and his followers do not win, all fall short. Jesus is going to win either way. Jesus would prove himself victorious over all his foes. Little did the religious leaders know that their attempt to show that Jesus was just an ordinary man would actually give evidence to the rest of history that Jesus was, in fact, the Son of God, the Messiah, the King of Kings. Let's keep reading. We're now in chapter 28, verses 1 through 6. Now, after the Sabbath, towards the dawn of the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to see the tomb. And behold, there was a great earthquake, for an angel of the Lord descended from heaven and came and rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothing white as snow. And for fear of him, the guards trembled and became like dead men. But the angel said to the woman, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you seek Jesus who is crucified. He is not here, for he is risen, as he said. Come, see the place where he lay." Here we see evidence of the resurrected king. Just as angels announced the birth of Jesus, an angel proclaims the resurrection of Jesus. From nightfall on Friday through sundown on Saturday, the Jews would have been at home observing the Sabbath. So Sunday at sunrise was the first opportunity that the ladies had to make their way to the tomb. They come to the tomb with spices and oils to anoint the body. As they approached the tomb, the earth shook, and they saw the exposed entrance of the tomb. An angel of the Lord is sitting on the tombstone that's supposed to be keeping Jesus in the tomb. Soldiers are frozen in fear on the ground, and they have reason to be afraid. Matthew said the angel looked like lightning, and his clothes were white as snow. He's painting a word picture. You know, many geographic wonders are hard to describe. Go visit the Grand Canyon or the redwood trees out west, or go visit Niagara Falls or the Rocky Mountains, and try and put those into words for your friends. It's hard to do. In the 1800s, as the American nation spread west, explorers came across the vistas of Yellowstone and couldn't describe what they witnessed. In 1871, they sent Thomas Moran to go and paint what he saw. His paintings expressed what words could never do. And so through the influence of Mr. Moran's paintings, Yellowstone National Park was born. Matthew's doing the same thing. He's attempting to paint a word picture of something so magnificent and overwhelming, he can barely describe it. If you've ever seen a lightning flash up really close, or have witnessed a fresh blanket of snow across a landscape where even the sound seems to be absorbed in the brilliant whiteness, your better able to know and understand the word picture Matthew's giving us in this passage. The frightened soldiers are an important element to the veracity of the truth of Christ's resurrection. The soldiers, as I said before, had nothing to gain and everything to lose by allowing Jesus to escape. If the body of Jesus went missing under their care, they could have been killed for failing at their job. Second, it is the women who are credited with finding Jesus first. If men were behind a fabricated story, they would never have used women in such a crucial part of this pivotal event. So Jesus is risen. The soldiers and the women are witnesses. The angel was there to proclaim Jesus' resurrection. But the angel was also there to instruct them on what to do next. Look at verse 7 through 10. "Then go quickly and tell his disciples that he has risen from the dead. And behold, he's going before you to Galilee. There you will see him. See, I've told you." So they departed quickly from the tomb with fear and great joy and ran to tell his disciples. And behold, Jesus met them and said, "Greetings." And they came up and took hold of his feet and worshipped him. Then Jesus said to them, "Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee, and there they will see me." Here we see we're to tell others about the king. Tell others about the king. The angel commanded the women to go and tell. Even though Jesus had defeated death, the work was just getting started. Without faith in Jesus, people cannot be saved. These two women were tasked with telling others about Jesus. They're the very first missionaries of the resurrected Christ. They had the most important message ever given. You know, in the days before digital communications, it took a long while for news to be carried from place to place via written communication, or a person had to deliver the message in person, traveling and communicating the message. In biblical times, it would take months or even years for a message to be delivered. When Rome had control of the Mesopotamian Rim, they built roads and created safe travel so messages and mail could be delivered more efficiently and safely. It's almost as if God himself knew that this was the perfect place and the perfect time for the message to be carried around the world. Thank God for those two ladies who were obedient to start the message, begin the chain, broadcast the news. The message would go to the four corners of the earth, and it began because these two ladies were obedient. Now we have high-speed internet, a global postal system. We have social media and the ability to fly anywhere in the world in about 24 hours. We can call around the world using cell phones. We have more ability to move the message of Christ than any other time in history. And just as the message came to those two ladies, it has come to you and to me. We are no less responsible to obey Jesus and the Great Commission than these two ladies were. The two ladies ran to go and tell. We must run to go and tell. On the way to take the good news, the women encounter the living and breathing Jesus Christ. And what's their response? Worship. We see the very first worship service of the risen Christ. Jesus speaks to them. His commands echo those of the angels. Don't be afraid, and go and tell my brothers. Jesus calls the men who abandoned him in the garden. He tells those who were hiding while he was being falsely tried and crucified. Jesus calls those guys his brothers. Jesus tells them he'll join them in Galilee. Galilee was where Jesus did most of his ministry, so it was very natural he would finish his time with the disciples in Galilee rather than Jerusalem. Because Jesus raised from the dead, it proves that there's an afterlife. It proves that we as humans who are created in the image of God also will have an afterlife. Those who follow the King in relationship with him will live with Jesus the King and his kingdom for all eternity. There is a joyful life after death for the believer. But for the unbeliever, for those who do not follow and worship the King, they will spend their eternity separated from a King in the place we call hell. Every person must respond to the realities of the resurrection of the King. We will either choose to follow him and obey him, or we will reject him. Those women and disciples had nothing to fear. The soldiers had everything to fear, for they were not following Jesus. They were trying to contain Jesus, make Jesus go away, insist that he was just an ordinary guy, that he was not the Son of God, not the King. The disciples and the women and the Pharisees and the guards all had a choice. What to do with Jesus? What will you do with Jesus? The angels and Jesus commanded the women to go and tell. Jesus, before he ascended into heaven, made the same command. It's a command that applies to us. Matthew 28:19-20. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching to observe all that I have commanded you. And behold, I am with you always, till the end of the age. The reason we're here on this earth is to tell others about Jesus, to make disciples of all nations. The reason we're here is to tell others about the risen King. May we be found faithful.